for me, it was just the opportunity. Like, I've always made moves across my career that were to place myself around people to get, like, enhance my skill set, help me grow, do things like that. It was never about chasing a logo.
Coach Ryan Grubbs taking the speed and data world by storm, assistant SNC football coach at Liberty University in charge of all of their data and return to play protocols. First, before I get into more of your background, tell me something good that's going on in your life.
Hey, we're just getting through spring ball right now. Everybody's healthy, so, you know, can't ask for any more than that. But I'll, yeah, exactly.
Knock on wood.
A little bit of luck, a little bit of good planning, and we'll keep this thing rolling.
Fantastic. And we are on the Talking Shop podcast, by the way, sharing stories, lessons, and experiences in sports performance and professional development, hopefully to get a little bit away from the X's and O's, even though the X's and O's are what brought us here. But Coach Grubbs has spent time at Purdue, Louisiana Tech, Ole Miss, and UIndy, the Greyhounds, correct?
That's right.
D2 life.
Right.
I was in the GLVC too. Yeah. So,
there you go.
So Coach Grubbs has been on the rise for a while now, but just starting, everyone is starting to see he's done a bunch of chats on profiling with the likes of Les Spellman, Jonas Dodu, and he now has a course, Learn How to Build a Speed Training Program with Les Spellman as well. So Coach Grubbs has been super nice to give me his time once before. I really enjoyed our chat and I said, hey, I'd love to have you on my podcast. So here we are again. So first, did I miss anything in your background? And then second, we'll get into the first big question.
No, I think that you pretty much covered it on that one. So let's get rolling.
Fantastic. So what is the first kind of fork in the road moment or story that, looking back, if you had taken a left instead of a right, all of this would be super different?
Yeah. So I was at UIndy was my first job, Division II, kind of born and raised. And then I got the opportunity to go get some experience at Ole Miss. And so through that experience with Coach Paul Jackson, things like that, I ended up taking the director of basketball position. It was a good opportunity to step up. I haven't worked basketball a ton, so I kind of took that on for a couple of years, but realized my true love and passion was in football. And so I had a choice to make. Was I needed to get back into football. At the time, I was young still, you know, I wasn't super experienced, didn't have a ton of connections. And so one of the opportunities that presented itself was at Louisiana Tech with Kurt Hester. And so he was basically like, hey, I'm not going to pay you a lot of money. I don't have the option to pay you a lot of money. But if you want to come here with a good opportunity, like, let's go. If not, you know, no worries, it's all good. So obviously, like, it was a huge pay cut for me, but it was a risk that was worth taking the time. And it was an experience that was invaluable. I wouldn't trade it for the entire world. Ended up moving down there, worked for Hester. You know, a lot of people know Kurt, you know, writing his book. We were understaffed and things like that. But the training that we did was unbelievable. The kids were unbelievable. And it led me to my next position, was at Purdue. And so if I never would have taken that risk and taken that gamble, who knows? I, you know, still may be in Olympic sports, which is fine, but it wasn't my passion. It wasn't my love. And so I think just being able to, like, take risks and take, you know, moves that don't exactly equate to, you know, this move's got to build on this one. Sometimes you got to take a step back on paper to push your career forward.
Fantastic. So I guess I'll ask about the first and then the second move. So growing up in Indy, having worked there, and then moving, I don't know how many hours that probably was, 8, 9, 10 to Ole Miss?
Yep.
So was that like an instant decision? You knew you were down. Did it take, looking back, probably a week or two longer than you thought it would have? Were you super open to that, kind of that first big move?
No, I mean, it was an easy decision for me. I was young. I was fortunate enough to get a full-time job right out of undergrad, right? So didn't have to do a ton of internships, didn't have to do a ton of volunteer opportunities, but knew I wanted that experience at the Power 5 level. And so moving down there was a no-brainer. And the staff that was down there on the football side at Ole Miss was unbelievable. And so down there was obviously Paul Jackson, who's I regard as one of the best strength coaches in college football. Dom Straczynski, who's my current boss here at Liberty. Joey Garcia was down there. Lanier Coleman is at Florida State. Just a lot of good, really, really good professionals were on that staff. And so it was a no-brainer to kind of get down there. And then that kind of led into the basketball position shortly after that.
What did you learn about working with basketball players? So the super elastic, bouncy, super jump high, probably don't have the biggest affinity for the weight room that has influenced kind of how you work with football players.
I think it's along the lines of, you know, what we do in the weight room is very general in nature. And so it just serves a means to an end, and less is more, really. And so we got away with doing a lot less type of work in the weight room than what we're normally used to in the football setting. And so it kind of just, that was kind of an eye opening for me, and kind of carried that over into the football side of things. And obviously it serves us well now because we're such a sprint based program here. A lot of our volume, all of our intensity, and a lot of our stimulus comes from the field. So it serves us well, both time-wise and stimulus-wise, to be smart and strategic about what we do in the weight room.
And then next, so the decision to take that pay cut, how long did that decision kind of take you to make? Who are all the people you kind of consulted? Was it part of this kind of premeditated grander plan, or did you stumble upon it and it was like, I never thought that this would happen, but I guess kind of why not? Or basically, what was that process? Because there's a lot of factors that go into it.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, it probably took me a couple weeks, to be perfectly honest. So short in the grand scheme of things for such a big decision to make. I mean, really, I just consulted all the guys that I knew at Ole Miss, because like I said, my circle was pretty small at that time. And you know, I didn't have know a ton of people, but I knew Kirk Hester was widely regarded as like forward thinking and, you know, being able to do a lot with a little, essentially. And so our talk, we kind of hit it off immediately right away. And like our personalities are very similar. And, you know, for me, it was just the opportunity. Like I've always made moves across my career that were to place myself around people to get like enhance my skill set and that helped me grow, do things like that. It was never about chasing a logo. And so every move that I made was strategic in the fact of, is this position going to make me a better professional long-term? Because that's always been the moves that I made. So I've been fortunate that of course money's a factor, but I haven't been driven solely by that. I've been driven by the opportunity of the position. And so he gave me the opportunity to really grow and like really cultivate my craft and give me a lot of experience programming wise and the rehab setting. I mean, I slept at his house for a year. And so, you know, we got to know each other really well. And we got pretty close. So, I mean, we're really close to this day.
And then, so now being on your fifth stop so far, having done this process a few times, beyond just the money, beyond who's going to be the head 1, 2, 3 people that you'll be learning from, what is probably the most underrated factor or question that you can ask yourself, the mentors of you, or the person you'll be working for, like kind of the dark horse that reflecting back has been a bigger influence than someone might think?
Yeah, I mean, I think just a lot of the questions I've had, you know, with Kurt and then moving on to Purdue and Liberty has just been like, how much freedom am I going to have to be able to do things inside the program? Like that's been huge for me, is do I have enough rope to be able to experiment, you know, for lack of a better term, because that's what's given me the most valuable experience up to this point, to be able to implement programs, having no fear of failing, and being able to continually evolve those programs. And so the bosses that I've had, I've been blessed to have them because they've given me the opportunity to essentially potentially fail, right? Because if you are always developing and implementing programs under the fear that you can never fail, then you can never push your programs to the fringes of what you need to be able to do. And so I've always had that, those conversations essentially of, do what you think you need to do, be able to experiment a little bit. Obviously, if you're going to fail, like we need to and be able to fix this very quickly, but don't be paralyzed by failure. Like, do what you think you need to do and let's push the program forward.
The term I use for that is autonomy. And that's one of the awesome things that I have in the private side. Thank you to my boss and my mentor slash second boss. But I know another private facility, basically the head guy writes all the programs and the coaches just coach it. And my thought is just like, how do you go into that next interview and like talk about what you believe in, what you've learned, you know, like maybe something you do a little bit different. It's like, yeah, the guy writes the programs and I just like go through it and this is what he believes in. But it's like, no. Like, what do you believe in? So I guess I'll add on that and ask, what is one thing that with your autonomy you experimented with that turned out to be really good? And what's one thing that you decided to mess around with, let's say for a phase or for a block, that just completely underwhelmed you with the results?
I think a lot of this front profiling stuff is going to be the biggest one that's kind of changed the trajectory of our programming over the last two stops that I've been at. So essentially it's having, not being fearful of doing less in the weight room. And I don't want this to be, you know, a public service announcement about not training. Like, that's obviously not it. Like, the weight room is still a very big piece of what we do. It's just, we implement it strategically based on what we see with the profiles. And we're not afraid to do less in the weight room and do more on the field. And a lot of times that ends up being the case. And so there's a lot of times there's this fear around, you know, what the coaches might think, or, you know, our guys getting too weak and things like that. When in reality, that's not the case whatsoever. Like, the game is played on the field, it's played in movement. We're trying to improve locomotive performance. Obviously, we're trying to use the weight room to, you know, help them tolerate loads better and injury prevention, things like that. But at the end of the day, we're improving sprint performance and we're looking at those metrics. We're not afraid to pull back in the weight room because the majority of our stimulus is coming from the field. And so a lot of those ideas kind of came on a couple years ago, and our ability to be able to do different things that a lot of people weren't already doing kind of served us well in that manner.
It's this weird line in sports, and I was chatting with an intern about this at TC Boost, where let's say you don't get the results you want. It is so much easier to feel good about leaning back on, at least I worked super hard, as opposed to maybe I didn't do enough.
Right.
And people will always default to that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just this idea around strength and conditioning. I don't want to throw strength and conditioning out of the bus, because like the field has grown so much in the last, you know, 5-6 years, and has insanely talented people in it. But there's this prevalent idea around strength and condition that strength is the most important aspect of it, which is a piece, but it's not the only piece. So if we're going to attach ourselves to one thing, it's going to be, we're going to have the strongest guys possible. Like, that's going to be what we're going to kind of anchor ourselves to, when in reality there's so many different moving parts to what we do and what we should be doing to prepare these guys for on-field performance. There's this fear around not hitting certain numbers or using certain lifts, or we have to do it this way or that way. And the reality is, you need to program the way that you see fit. And so, if you choose to have the majority of time spent in the weight room, like, that's very fine. But don't be afraid to be able to go out and do things that you think are going to benefit your athletes. So,
fantastic. And then I guess last thing, I keep coming up with things based on our conversation, but so this will be more of a cliffhanger or a teaser to see if maybe one of my listeners wants to reach out to you. But speaking of experimentation, having been mentored by Bouchek's Nader and doing all the RTP stuff, I know where this answer is going to be. So I'm giving you a nice underhand softball you can hit out of the park. One of the biggest beliefs about your RTP stuff, your return to play, that kind of most people wouldn't think of, and the success you've seen from it.
Yeah, I mean, this would be, I was fortunate enough when I was at Louisiana Tech to be able to, you know, visit Boo and sit down with him and kind of learn some of his philosophy. So none of this is anything new, but it's like, for us, we're always chasing intensity. And so there's this, again, And this is what I did when I first started rehabbing guys, that, you know, submaximal intensities and submaximal volumes are important when you're trying to layer in things that they're not yet prepared for. But when you're only chasing volumes and submaximal intensities for the sake of chasing volume and submaximal intensities, you're not moving the needle any closer where they need to be. And so for us, like, we're always trying to add intensity. Like, intensity at the expense of volume, as long as they're prepared for it. And so, because at the end of the day, we want our guys to get back to, say we're trying to get them back to maximal sprint performance or jumping performance, we want to layer in the intensity every single session as long as it's tolerable. So if we're just adding more volume, more sets, more reps, the same exact intensity, we're not moving them any closer to the return to play or the end goal, the end stage, which is being able to tolerate high forces in short times. And that's going to be the main thing that breaks guys in the first place. And so the quicker we can get them to maximal forces in the least amount of time, high rate of force development, high force, the quicker we can get them to that end point, then we can start to layer on capacity after that. But if we're trying to chase capacity before we have the intensity, I think it's a little bit of fool's gold a little bit.
Fantastic. So hopefully that sparked some of the listeners' brains, and I will leave it there. So next, what is the coolest, kind of craziest story? You know, like, let's say it's the story you most tell at a bar when you meet strangers and they're like, oh, that's you're a strength coach. Like, what's something cool that you do? Like, what story do you always lean back on?
I don't know if it's going to be cool or crazy, but this one kind of sticks out in my mind. I have a very like soft spot for like rehabilitation and things like that, and the athletes that I work with. And so we had an athlete last year, just been continually hurt, continually banged up, shoulder surgeries, multiple, hadn't played in 2 or 3 years, ends up finally getting healthy last year. Then 7-on-7, the last day before we're kind of going into camp, and, you know, comes down, lands awkwardly, does his knee. And so, again, it was a non-surgical intervention, so it was more rehab, things like that. And we finally got him back healthy, you know, the last quarter of the year. So we hadn't played ball in about 3 years, finally got him healthy. The kid just kind of stuck it out, stuck with it, kept going. First game back, first pass, scored the touchdown. And so, I mean, it wasn't like we weren't playing Alabama, but again, it was like for that kid, that was everything to him. And so, like, those are the stories that I find the coolest. And they're probably not the craziest ones to most people, but those are the ones I kind of lean on.
Like out of a movie, couldn't have drawn it up like that, like even tried. Yeah.
No, it really was. So, and the whole team knew how much emotional, like almost like emotional trauma he'd been through, just from the amount of injuries and things like that. And, you know, and so, you know, multiple times thought his career was over, done, just kind of stick it out. So it was good to see him get back out there and have a little success.
What was that celebration like in the sidelines?
It was big. A lot of guys over there, you know, happy. Some guys crying, you know, like it was big. Like, he's a very well-liked kid. It was emotional for those guys. Like I said, like, it wasn't the national championship or it wasn't anything like that. It was just, everyone knew how much it meant to him though. Mm-hmm. So it was big, and, you know, he's been around for a while. So it was good to see that.
Fantastic. And then next, so kind of throughout the whole process, could you speak on how valuable it was or it is and kind of speaking in general, the value of performance coaches becoming not certified athletic trainers or DPTs, but to become more well-versed in return to play stuff, and consequently how the setting of rehab, maybe being in the turf, or sorry, in the weight room or on the turf, and just you being able to speak that language and you knowing the end goal of what high performance is, how valuable that was you doing it as the strength coach or the performance coach or the speed coach, as opposed to in a more traditional RTP setting?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is that there's open communication. Everyone has the same goal in mind. And so it doesn't have to be me that's doing the rehab from start to finish, or the medical professional, or the AT, the PT, but someone needs to do it. And so, and everyone needs to be on the same page when they do it. And that's the most important thing, because the athlete's in the center and everyone else is on the periphery around it. And I think when you think about rehab, like there's this mentality and thinking of like rehabilitation training needs to be vastly different than what normal training is. When in fact, like normal performance training it's rehabilitation. It's just a truncated version of it and a regressed version of it based on where they're at, based on their injury and their orthopedic issues. And so the only other factor is the risk of re-injury is significantly higher. And so you have to be cautious and you have to know what you're doing. You have to listen and talk and communicate with your athlete. But if you can put someone back together from an injury, you can train healthy athletes. I think that's the biggest thing, is that if you can get someone healthy and pain-free and you can get them performing at a high level exceeding where they were previously, like that's good training. Like that's normal, good training for athletes. And so you have to be able to be very, very adept at changing your plan, having a plan A, B, and C, and knowing your regressions and knowing how to progress. So it's not only holding the athlete back, sometimes it's pushing them forward. And so you got to be very, very solid in what you think is orthopedically sound, and knowing these things and how to progress and regress will help you as a practitioner working with normal athletes.
That's the next point I was going to say. I was taking our intern through kind of just his journal or his diary, as we call it, that he just takes notes and questions and stuff. And once a week we sit down and like chalk talk for like an hour, hour and a half. And I was taking him through our hamstring return to play protocol, which is largely based on Derek Hansen, which has been like life-changing for us. And it's weird that we get a lot of kind of injured or banged up athletes, partly because PT clear doesn't mean game ready. And we just have to put, you know, duct tape our athletes back together from playing on three sports teams with really dumb sport coaches that just wreck them. But I was describing how, because I know what the end goal is, I know what full performance is, and I train our youth athletes all the way up to pros, I know every single progression, regression that you could possibly do. So I have a way to evaluate where they're currently at. I know what the end goal is because that's what I do, right? But because I have this variety of athletes and starting places and stuff like that, then I know how to progress and regress and move them closer to move that needle, like you said. So I think that the RTP coming from a performance mindset is a little bit different. And I think it's super valuable. So a cool story, maybe not super crazy, but I bet that sideline was crazy, but a cool story nonetheless. So next, last big question. The biggest kind of full circle or moment that you're most proud of that maybe took a little bit of time for you to realize kind of how neat it really was.
Yeah, I think like really understand like the year that we had during the COVID year was big, because that was another move that didn't really make sense on paper, right? So I was at Purdue, you know, I'm from Indiana, so like it's home for me. And I worked for a great boss, worked for Justin Lovett, who's the head strength coach of the Rams now. A really good opportunity, really good experience there. Like, I loved it there. But then this opportunity at Liberty came open, which gave me more opportunity, gave me a chance to work for a guy that I really trusted. And had a chance to be around a good head coach. And so, again, it was a risk. It doesn't make sense to people, like, go from Purdue to Liberty, like, I could talk to people and some people didn't even know, like, where's Liberty? Like Lynchburg, Virginia. So that was obviously a gamble and a thing, but I knew it was the right move. Like, I knew it helped my development and my growth. And so as soon as I got here, COVID hit. And so we're training. And then, you know, Liberty is a very, very, very young football program. It's in its infancy. It's a young school. And so there's obviously not been a ton of opportunities to have a ton of team success. And Coach Freeze has a lot to do with like where the trajectory of this program is. But that COVID year is kind of the year that they put the program on the map. And so it was a year for us where we had, you know, the only loss we had was by 1 point to a really good NC State team. We beat two Power Five teams, Virginia Tech and Syracuse. We ended up having a really, really good, successful year of being in the top 25. So again, it just goes back to the fact of, like, are you willing to take risks and like take risks and go take opportunities that you know are in your best benefit? And so obviously, like, taking this opportunity at Liberty, like, I knew was the right move for me. But then just having that year that we had, that was pretty special for this program in this town, was capped it off.
Speaking on the autonomy at current roles and how impactful that is to kind of push the limits and consequently get a little bit better success if you're trying new things, what were some of those things that navigating the challenges of COVID and limited group sizes and restrictions and all of that stuff, did it work out that you're more of a speed influence guy, that, you know, you don't have to be crammed in a weight room touching all the same stuff? Or what were some of the biggest return on investment things that either COVID made you be creative, or that your own philosophy kind of lended to be practical in COVID?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of joked around with it afterwards. It kind of played to our benefit, really, to be perfectly honest. Like, we're a sprint-based program, and other people say that they are as well, and they probably are, but we can get a lot done on the field that we need to do. So if we're out on the field, we're outside, we're in big open spaces, we have a lot of sleds, things like that, we can get a lot done in our program that isn't really too much of a detour from what we normally do. And so, and we prefer small group sizes anyway. Like, we call our speed days our performance days. And so those days we like small groups. We intentionally have small groups across the entire days to have a better coach athlete ratio, get more out of our guys, get more coaching, things like that. So really, in all reality, like, being outside and having smaller groups didn't really, I don't, in my opinion, didn't affect us as much as maybe some other programs. And so, and then again, I just solidified the fact of, like, you don't need as much work in the weight room, and you can be significantly more efficient in what you do if you're able to apply the right stimulus on the field. Because a lot of the high velocity stimulus, a lot of the intensive plyo work, a lot of the heavy sled work served as specific strength stimulus for our guys. And like, the amount of resiliency around the lower leg and the foot and the ankle was pretty incredible for our guys. So yeah, it was a good little forced experiment for us.
Big time players make big time plays. That's what I like to say. So last kind of question, not on the script. So having grown kind of your internet presence kind of recent, was that kind of by design? So we've gone through how you've taken new routes and choices in your career, you know, for the autonomy and for just the opportunity to develop as yourself as a coach. Has more of an online presence been always part of it, or has it been more recent where someone was like, hey, I want you to, you know, do this webinar, or hey, like, let's do this course together, or hey, come speak here? Has that been intentionally sought out, or has that come your way just by doing really good stuff?
No, I mean, I think I kind of fell into it by accident, to be perfectly honest. Like, it was a combination of, like, being here in this situation and working for the boss that I do, that he kind of like encouraged me and allowed me to do things that were outside the norm, right? So I wasn't prohibited from doing anything specific, but I kind of just fell into it by being around really good people. And so again, it came back to the same thing as, like, I had a really good relationship with Les, I had a really good relationship with Jonas. Like, in my opinion, there's no one better around, like, coaching I and kinematics than Jonas's. Like, if that's, you know, if that's your thing and you want to learn about, like, kinematics and sprinting, like, he's the man on that. And that's what I knew years ago. That's why I intentionally developed a relationship with him. And we had a really good relationship. We saw a lot of things the exact same way. And then just kind of grew from there. And so from there kind of spawned, like, different webinars and different courses and things like that. And it kind of just happened by accident rather than by design. So again, it just goes back to the fact of, like, I sought out these people 5 or 6 years ago to help me grow and to help me develop as a professional. And I developed friendships on the backside of it. And so it was never this push of, like, oh, I'm going to start a business or do this and that. Like, that's never been my thing. Like, I just love helping people and putting out information. And, like, I like to do it because I'm learning along the way too. Like doing these kinds of things and like developing courses and webinars, like helps me formulate my thoughts and make them more clear. And so like, if you can't explain it to normal people, then you don't understand it well enough. And so being able to kind of go through this process, help me grow as a professional and kind of, you know, lean on these guys and, you know, pretty important friends of mine. So
I think that there's so much value, speaking on your last point about really trying to put to pen and paper or like verbally what you really do believe in. I've been doing my podcast. This will be episode 131. I'm so bad. I always say like, oh, this will be episode X, but I don't know like 100%. So episode 130 something. I've been doing this since like July 2019. And about half of my episodes actually are like solo episodes. And it's it never ceases to amaze me how I can like speak. Well, I'm kind of long-winded on one topic for like 30, sometimes even like 40 minutes. But even if you just like record, you know, you write down 10 topics that you believe in and you just record 10 episodes just on Zoom with a little 10 slide PowerPoint, just for no one else but yourself, you'd be so amazed at how challenging, but also like mind clearing it is to really like coherently put together what you really do believe in. So I think that there's a bunch of value in that. And I totally agree. How well you explain something is how well, you know, you understand it yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's why everyone was attracted to like Boo's work and Dan's work and Jonas and like these guys. And they're just able to make things very simple, easily digestible, and able people like consume this very complex information and this complex, you know, ideology. And they're able to make it simple. And so like that's a sign of like a really, really experienced practitioner. They're able to take all of these different things that they've learned over decades and reduce it down into two sentences. And it's not just two sentences for the sake of being two sentences. It's two sentences that actually make you understand what's going on. So obviously like we're all in the pursuit of getting to those guys' levels, but yeah.
Make it as simple as possible, but not any simpler.
Exactly.
And I totally agree. Some of the people that I love listening to the most that I always seek out their YouTube videos or them on podcasts, like Dr. Mike Israetel of RP Strength. He's a little vulgar, which is funny, but just like, I just love listening to him speak because it makes so much sense. And it's these like relatively complex topics about nutrition and training and all this stuff. So figure out like who you like listening to the most, what they do really well, and then kind of go from there. Cause I think public speaking is one of the most underrated useful skills and people always shy away from it, but it's like, well, it's not going anywhere anytime soon. So I think there's a lot of boxes to be checked about like being a content creator. I heard like 70% of the world considers themselves a content creator, which I think is nuts.
No, I mean, I think if you can verbalize or at least put your thoughts and ideas on the paper, it makes you so much more powerful. Because there's a lot of smart people out there that can't get their ideas out of their head. Mm. And so we need more of that. Like we need more people talking and communicating and like research and like researchers and coaches kind of merging together and kind of like coming into the same space to be able to get these, all these ideas that are like, oh, this is theory, this is application. We need to get them to kind of merge together and be able to push like performance forward in the right direction. So.
And you're working on your PhD, correct?
Not yet. It hasn't started yet. It's been a multiple year pushing it back every single year type of thing, but it's coming. And so it kind of got spurred on by the fact of like being around such great researchers the last couple of years, like them helping us out with our program, like JB and Dr. Ken Clark. And Dr. Ken Clark has been huge for me. I guess been one of my biggest mentors. And so like he can't get enough praise the amount of work that he does in this space. Them kind of coming into our space and us like being able to do like training research projects and things like that, it's been huge and it's been great for our guys too.
So it'll be based on your data of your guys at Liberty.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, ideally we'll just merge what we're doing day to day across the entire year and, you know, formulating our question off the back of that and, you know, trying to get the right research applications and the right questions answered that will kind of push the space forward for the next couple of years.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, hopefully that starts soon for sure.
Yeah.
And my own thesis being as like the sports scientist for the TCU Beach Volleyball team, who might be number one in the country when the rankings come out today, which is very exciting. It was like, I'm like their sports scientist. And then I just happened to get a thesis out of it. Like literally I was in the sand every day collecting the numbers, and it was kind of observational because there's like literally no studies in women's college beach volleyball. But I think that there's so much value in the research where it's like, it's training first and research second. So I think that that's going to be huge for sure. So,
yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing by far is that one, football by and large is either out of necessity because of rules or out of, they don't want people knowing what they're doing. Like there's a lot of training and research that should be done with high level football guys that can't or won't be done. And so I'd like to be able to kind of change that a little bit. And so we're kind of doing research and practical applications on real world subjects, on stuff that's like actually applicable in the environment. Because the biggest thing that coaches always say across all of these kind of research things is like, well, we can't do that because of our logistics. Well, it's like, we are doing it. We're doing it in our setting, like can do it. So the more research studies that come out that are actually in, you know, collegiate environments with football players, I think the more powerful the research is going to be.
For sure. And that's the literal population that most people are working with. You know, it's like, it's great that there was like 12 super highly trained international level rugby players that did this, but like, that's not my population. You know, there's right. truth, but it's not the most transferable, I guess. So,
yeah.
Last Absolutely. Question. I always say the X's and O's are what bring us here, you know. Yeah. My fascination for speed and data and training, hence our phone call, and you just doing super legit stuff and being recognized for it. But, you know, the stories, lessons, and experiences, I think, are the most valuable stuff. But we have to be good at our jobs to get to these positions, how it kind of all goes around. So if you had to give a question, a phrase, something that is super valuable to yourself, or you find yourself constantly repeating to interns, whatever it may be, it can be a sticky note that they put on their mirror. It can be like a daily, a weekly, a monthly thing, a question, a statement that you think can help the listener get better.
I think that, and I can only speak to me personally, the constant thing that I kind of frame in my head is don't lose your edge and don't lose your mentality as you were when you were younger. It's like as you go through the field, like obviously everyone has kind of had the experiences of like, you know, earn your stripes, right? Intern, volunteer, do those kind of things. And like when you're doing that, it's like you have this constant thirst for knowledge and like pursuit of like, I want to be around better people, I want to know more people, I want to know more things, I'm going to read everything. Like, and then as we go along, we kind of go through our different stops and you know, we have different things that pop up, lifestyle and things like that. But people kind of lose their edge a little bit as far as like they forget how bad they wanted it when they first came in the field. And like their how that like relentless pursuit of knowledge expedited their career and fast tracked it because they were just consuming all of this information and they were reaching out to people and they were doing really good stuff. And it was this constant thirst of like, I always want to be better every single day because you were competing against a lot of other people for jobs. So you had to, out of necessity, you weren't going to make it. So I think like, if you always keep that kind of mentality and like, you're always pushing, like you're always pushing to try to learn more and be better and enhance your skill set, I think it'll just serve you nothing but benefit long term.
What has been the most impactful for you for whenever you're feeling uninspired or you kind of catch yourself lacking a little bit? And it's not to say that like every day is going to be super high and super motivated and maximizing every day. But if you look back and reflect, be like, ah, that wasn't like the best week or like, ah, that wasn't the best kind of month for me, as I've experienced that myself, my job search and my networking and stuff like that over the last, I don't know, 6 months versus like 2 years ago when I was hitting it so hard, you know, it's definitely not what it used to be. Now my goals have kind of changed and I'm starting to really appreciate where I'm at. And I know I got to do really good stuff where I'm at to get to that next spot. But you know, if that reflection hits you a week, a month down the road, what has kind of been valuable in bringing you back?
I think reaching out and having people in your circle that you know are going to push you, right? So it's like, it's easy for me. Like, if I ever feel like I'm getting lazy or doing things like that, like, all I have to do is reach out to Les or Jonas, and they'll get me right back on track, because they're doing stuff nonstop that every time I look at, like, the amount of stuff that they're doing, I'm like, oh, man, like, I need to pick my game up, right? So then it's just from there, it's like finding things that you love to do. Like, it's easy to put out content if you love doing it and if you love, like, what you're actually putting out. Like, to me, it's interesting, like, the more all of the content and things that Jonas and Les and that we've done kind of in conjunction with each other, like, it interests me. Like, I love it. And so, like, it's just as useful to me as it is to anybody else. So that makes it easy to kind of work and push and things like that. But now, kind of making sure these guys keep me on track and seeing the amount of productivity and hustle that they have and things like that, it's hard not to try and keep up.
Yeah, super valuable to have good people in your circle and keeping you on track for sure. So, wrapping up this episode, I want to say thank you very much for your time, but I will roll out the red carpet for you to shamelessly, emphasis on shameless, shamelessly plug whatever you got to plug. Where can the people get more of Coach Grubbs and what you're doing next?
Yeah, I mean, for us, like, you kind of already mentioned it, like, me and Les are coming out with a course. It's going to release May 18th. And so, we've got the links. It's links on my page, links on his page, things like that. But then also go out, and me and Jonas are going to be putting on a couple workshops here in May, things like that. So if you guys want to, you can check those out. And then any content that, like, Speedworks and Jonas and those guys put out, like, that stuff's gold. Like, I have all the stuff they put out on their website, like, I have no affiliation with and stuff like that. I just think that stuff is top notch in our industry. And then, like I said, like, I want to just give Ken Clark another shout out too. Like, the amount of help that he's provided, like, me and our program, like, can't be understated. So he's one of the researchers kind of trailblazing this path and kind of got us on this road ahead. So, yeah.
And what are your handles?
I don't even know my handle.
I think it's
Coach R. Grubbs, I think. Yeah, I think there's a Coach Grubbs that's not me that, like, Spellman tagged it in a couple times, and Jonas may have, but I think it's Coach R. Grubbs.
Fantastic. So I will look those up, Instagram and Twitter, and those will be in the show notes below. So thank you very much again. Super valuable just to learn a little bit more about the coach behind and the story behind kind of everything you're doing right now. So I appreciate your openness, and I look forward to chatting next time.
Awesome. Appreciate it.